We're going to look at the Christian view of sexuality. And to do that, we need to look at Christ. And so the word Christian means a follower of Christ. So we need to look at the teachings of Christ. And so Jesus in Mark 10 said, "From the beginning of creation, God made them male and female. For this cause shall a man leave his father and mother and cleave to his wife, and the twain shall be one flesh." So Jesus himself identified two sexes, male and female, and that marriage was the union of male and female. Matter of fact, all of creation, you look at it, nearly every creature reproduces male and female. So mammals have XX chromosomes for female and XY chromosomes for male. Most birds, fish, crustaceans, insects, and reptiles have ZW chromosomes for the female and ZZ chromosomes for the male. And then some very small creatures have XX and XO chromosomes, XX for the female and XO for the male. And these are small-legged creatures such as scorpions, spiders, ticks, mites, silverfish, dragonflies, grasshoppers, crickets, cockroaches, molluscs, snails, and even slugs. To think of almost every living creature has male and female, and they reproduce by the male and female coming together. And so we see that in Genesis, everything from mosquitoes to whales produces with the union of male and female. Genesis 6:19 says, "And of every living thing of all flesh, two of every sort shall thou bring into the ark to keep them alive with thee. They shall be male and female." And Genesis, again, the story of Noah, chapter 7. "And the Lord said unto Noah, Come thou and all thy house into the ark. Of every clean beast thou shalt take of thee seven, the male and his female, and of the beasts that are not clean by two, the male and his female, of the fowls also of the air by sevens, the male and the female, to keep seed alive upon the face of the earth." So apart from extremely rare cases, the norm for living creatures is to have either male or female chromosomes. Every single cell in the body has the male or the female chromosomes. Now, procreation. To ensure procreation, God made it so that males would be attracted to the females with the pleasure that is part of the attraction. If this were not the case, every species on earth would go extinct. So males are attracted to females. This desire is so strong that in nature, the males of various species will fight sometimes to the death in order to decide who gets the female. Very strong motivations. Now, it's interesting that there are some scientific and medical studies that suggest that certain diets of particular foods and possible weight gain may have an effect of decreasing testosterone or increasing estrogen levels in the person's body, but this does not change the chromosomes. Also recent studies from the United Nations and the World Health Organization, they've released reports that indicate that increased use of glyphosates, now this is most common in Monsanto's Roundup herbicide, and GMOs, that where these are used to a large degree, there are instances of hormone disruption in animals. Androgyny, transgenderism, gender bending, and in humans, especially when consumed by pregnant mothers. So we see that maybe instead of focusing on the re-education of school children, maybe some attention should be on the diet and the GMOs and the glyphosates. The role of role models. Now, the higher an animal is in intelligence, the more its development is influenced by learned behavior imprinting from the role of an adult of their species. So with humans, could it be that the last generation and a half that children have been subjected to alter role models, that maybe through Hollywood and maybe through the feminist movement that has put pressure to lessen masculinity, and so it may have been providing less masculine roles for the young boys and less female role modeling for the young girls. We've gone from Hollywood, which has changed from father knows best, honoring the role model of the father, to Archie Bunker and Homer Simpson, which makes a fool out of the role model of the father. And then schools introduce games where there's no winners and no losers. And so there's been an effort within the last generation and a half, largely from the feminist movement, to demasculinize men and metrosexual and all those different terms. So maybe the situation we're facing today with an increase of alternative sexual identities, maybe the altered role model is where the focus needs to be. And that, again, with higher intelligent species, the more their development is influenced by role models. There's an instance in Africa where the poaching has killed off adult elephants so much that the young male elephant does not have a role model and is totally unruly and stomping around and trashing things and disrupting the whole dynamics of the tribe. And they're seeing this more and more because of the poaching killing off the adult males to get their tusks. Well, God's plan. What's God's plan? Well, if we look at the Bible, the book of Genesis, God made man in his image, Adam. And then he put Adam into a deep sleep and took a rib out, and from the rib, he formed Eve. Now, the word rib, there are numerous Bible commentaries that interpret the word rib as side. So it could read that God took a side out of Adam and made Eve. And Genesis 2:20 says, "And Adam gave names to all the cattle and the fowls of the air and every beast of the field. But for Adam, there was not found an help meet for him. And the Lord caused a deep sleep to fall upon Adam, and he slept. And he took one of his ribs and closed up the flesh thereof. And the rib which the Lord had taken from man made he woman, and brought her unto the man. And Adam said, This is now bone of my bone, flesh of my flesh. She shall be called woman, because she was taken out of man. Therefore shall a man leave his father and his mother, and shall cleave unto his wife, and they shall be one flesh." In other words, God took out of Adam a side. Perhaps the side is the emotional side, or the intuition, or the verbal communication skills, or attention to relationships, or empathy, or sensitivity, or gentleness, and humility, and nurturing. These qualities that mothers have that men are not having as much. So Adam would have woken up from his deep sleep after his rib was taken out. He would have woken up and said, "I'm half the man I used to be." And husbands subconsciously acknowledge this when they introduce their wives saying, "This is my better half." And so in an interesting verse, there's Genesis chapter 5, verse 1 and 2. It says, "This is the book of the generations of Adam. In the day God created man, in the likeness of God made he him. Male and female created he them, and blessed them, and called their name Adam." Did you catch that? So here, Adam was the one who called Eve, Eve. It says in Genesis 3:20, "And Adam called his wife's name Eve, because she was the mother of all living." So from God's point of view, he still saw them as one. So God made Adam in his image, put Adam to sleep, took half out, brought half back, and he calls them still Adam. And so each individual person is made in the image of God. But in a mysterious and wonderful way, man and woman united in marriage also reflects the image of God. Thus, at some level, the attack on two sexes and the attack on marriage is an attack on the image of God. And of course, in Christian theology, the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit are one. So one God, three persons. And with Adam and Eve, you have the two persons, but they're one. And this use of the Bible in referring this way is also seen in the Old Testament, where God calls all 12 tribes of Israel by the name of one person, Jacob. Here's the verse in Jeremiah 46, 27. "Fear thou not, O my servant Jacob, for behold, I will save thee from afar off, from the land of their captivity, and Jacob shall return and be in rest, and none shall make him afraid." So here he's talking to the entire nation, but he's calling him Jacob. He's calling them and using the terms him as a singular. So God refers to Adam and Eve. They're two persons, but he sees them as one. So this is beautiful. And Jesus reaffirmed the Genesis account of sex and marriage in Mark 10. He said, "From the beginning of creation, God made them male and female. For this cause shall a man leave his father and mother and cleave to his wife, and they twain shall be one flesh. So then they are no more twain, but one flesh. What God therefore hath joined together, let not man put asunder." So we don't want to put asunder the marriage, but we don't want to put asunder any of what Jesus taught. So marriage between a man and a woman is the oldest human institution. So out of all of human history, the very first institution was God uniting together man and woman. So Jesus validated marriage by doing his first public miracle at a wedding, the wedding feast of Cana, where he turned water into wine. Now, interesting side note, God saved the best for last. An interesting question is, what was the very last thing that God created? Okay, the book of Genesis, he creates light, he creates the stars and earth and all the creatures. But what was the very, very last thing that God created? It was the woman. And so any human creator, such as an artist, a painter, a sculptor, when they're creating their very last work, would they throw some paint on a canvas and be done? Or would that artist want to show off their brilliance, show off their creative ability, the apex, the pièce de résistance, the crowning expression of their creative ability? So when you read the scriptures, God made Adam, put him to sleep, and he brought Eve to Adam. He was proud of her. He was showing her off. He was showing his creative brilliance and beauty and all the intuition and strength that a woman has. God was proud of the creation of woman. So it's sort of interesting that the attack on sexuality is laying an attack on the woman. So the feminist movement, interestingly enough, the more feminist a woman becomes, the less feminine she appears. And so wants to look more like a boy and so forth. And then we see in other cultures, the role of women is put down. In Islam, they say that takes two women to testify in court against one man, so a woman has half the value there. There's a verse that says, if a dog, a donkey, or a woman passes between you and Mecca when you're praying, your prayers are invalidated. So a woman is put down equal to a dog or a donkey in that verse. And then a man can have four wives in Islam. And so you divide it out. You have one wife for one husband. They're equal. But here a woman is worth a fourth. And in Islam, all a man has to do to divorce the woman is just say, I divorce you three times. She's out the door. And no alimony or rights. But here in the Bible story, woman is elevated to equality with man. One man, one woman, united together, they're one. Genesis 1:26 says, "And God said, let us make man in our image, after our likeness. Let them have dominion over the fish of the sea, over the fowl of the air, over the cattle, all the earth, and over every creeping thing that creepeth on the earth." So God made man in his own image. In the image of God created he him. Male and female created he them. And God blessed them and said unto them, be fruitful and multiply, replenish the earth and subdue it. And then God saw everything that he had made, and behold, it was very good. So he makes everything and calls it good, but finally after he makes man and woman, puts them together, he calls it very good. So the attack on the sexuality of a man and a woman, the attack on marriage, is an attack on the creation of God and, on a certain level, an attack on the image of God. Now, marriage, it's so important in the Bible that even redemption is portrayed in light and in terms of a marriage. The Old Testament reveals Israel as a virgin betrothed unto the Lord, and the Lord's name is Jealous, and Israel has played the harlot. And then in the New Testament, John the Baptist said, I said, I am not the Christ, but I am sent before him. And John the Baptist goes on, he that hath the bride is the bridegroom. But the friend of the bridegroom, which standeth and heareth him, rejoices greatly because of the bridegroom's voice. And this my joy, therefore, is fulfilled. So John the Baptist is referring to Jesus as a bridegroom. And then the Apostle Paul wrote in 2 Corinthians 11, he says, for I am jealous over you with a godly jealousy, for I have espoused you to one husband, that I may present you as a chaste virgin to Christ. Again, the analogy of a marriage. The book of Revelation, chapter 21, says, and I, John, saw the holy city, the New Jerusalem, coming down from God out of heaven, prepared as a bride adorned for her husband. And there came unto me one of the seven angels and talked with me, saying, come hither, and I will show thee the bride, the Lamb's wife. So here, all of the plan of redemption is portrayed as a marriage. And so again, when we attack marriage, we're attacking the scriptures themselves. Now, this liberal sexual agenda, it's a relatively recent thing. A dozen years ago, when there was a candidate running for president, Barack Obama, at that time, in 2008, there was not one congressman or senator, Democrat or Republican, who was publicly in favor of gay marriage. Not even Bill or Hillary Clinton were in favor of gay marriage. Just as recently as 2008, every single public official, Democrat or Republican, was in favor publicly of marriage being a man or woman, just that recent. And even when candidate Obama was at Saddleback Church in 2008, he said, I believe that marriage is a union between a man and a woman. Now, for me as a Christian, it is also a sacred union. God is in the mix. So here, running for president, he said he believed in marriage as a man and a woman. Yet his campaign advisor, David Axelrod, wrote in a recent book in 2015 that the candidate had engaged in political deception. So Time Magazine, February 10th, 2015, had the headline, Axelrod, Obama misled the nation when he opposed gay marriage in 2008. The article goes on, Barack Obama misled Americans for his own political benefit when he claimed in 2008 election to oppose same-sex marriage for religious reasons. His former political strategist, David Axelrod, writes in a new book, Believer, My 40 Years in Politics. I'm just not very good at bull SH. And he goes on, the candidate Obama told Axelrod after an event where he stated his opposition to same-sex marriage, according to the book. The Time Magazine article goes on. He said, Axelrod writes that he knew Obama was in favor of same-sex marriages during the first presidential campaign, even as Obama publicly said he only supported civil unions, not full marriages. Axelrod also admits to counseling Obama to conceal that position for political reasons. Time magazine continued, opposition to gay marriage was particularly strong in the black church, and as he ran for higher office, he grudgingly accepted the counsel of more pragmatic folk like me and modified his position to support civil unions rather than marriage, which he would term a sacred union, Axelrod writes. It goes on, the insider's account provides the clearest look yet at Obama's long-established flip-flop, one of the blemishes on his record as a progressive. Now, that was, again, Time magazine article. Well, no sooner did he get elected than that president's views on marriage evolved, and he expected every single person in the nation to immediately evolve with him. And if they didn't, he would send the Department of Justice in to persecute them, whether they were cake bakers, photographers, or even Kentucky county clerks. And so we see that the 6,000-year human history of marriage, beginning in Genesis, as a man and a woman, is suddenly, just within a dozen years, thrown out the window. It was a political bait and switch. What's that? Well, if you go back and analyze the 2008 season in politics, gay marriage was being presented to the public as the government should be kept out of the bedroom. But no sooner did it pass than the gay activists headed immediately to the preschools to indoctrinate little children. If they would have revealed that part of their agenda when they were campaigning, the mainstream public would have never supported it. So it was a bait and switch. They said, it's just going to be private. We don't want the government telling us what to do in our bedroom. But as soon as it passed, then it was public, and we're going to go ahead and go teach this to little children. And it is happening at an accelerating speed, like water trickling through a levee, then suddenly bursting into a flood. The sexual transformation began slowly, then increased at an accelerating speed. From George Washington to George W. Bush, homosexuals were not allowed in the military. Bill Clinton instituted a military policy of don't ask, don't tell. Then Obama allowed gay marriage. And the agenda quickly went from the bedroom to the classroom. Impressionable youth were being indoctrinated with alternative sexual arrangements. Schools discouraged the use of names mother and father, but rather parent. Hollywood quickly joined in and began to present characters in movies and in sitcoms who were gay or had alternative sexual identities. Then, without notice, the agenda moved from gay marriage to transgenderism. A dozen years ago, almost the entire population of America, no one had heard of that term. And suddenly, it was mainstreamed. Facebook came up with 70-plus genders. Teachers were fired for not using preferred pronouns. And some of the people in this movement apparently delighted in confusing people, particularly in the older generation, and they would dress looking as someone from a different sex, knowing that these older people would be confused. And if they were accidentally mislabeled, they would accuse the offender of being hateful, ignorant, and evil. Girls in the schools were forced to share bathrooms and showers and locker rooms with biological males. Feminists, in a curious silence, refused to stand up for the girls who have practiced and worked hard at their sport, and then, when the competition takes place, they have to compete against biological males. In many cases, the males have not undergone surgery and have not undergone hormone therapy. They're just feeling that day like a girl, and they win all the medals. So the president then began to demand that the military be purged of anyone clinging to the old morality. It was no longer tolerated. There was mandatory sensitivity training, and thousands of officers, including chaplains, were labeled intolerant and forced out of the military for not enthusiastically embracing the new sexuality. Then the president used his influence as the honorary head of the Boy Scouts to help usher in the transformation in the Boy Scouts to allowing in gay leaders and so forth, abandoning the oath of being morally straight. With no accepted legal definition, students were suspended, politicians were forced out of office, and without any generally accepted scientific definition, professors were fired, and also doctors were fired. A doctor in California was almost in tears when he said that it's effectively child abuse to confuse children with the transgendered agenda until they reach puberty. So every man and woman knows that you go through a very significant change when you reach puberty. Boys go from just wanting to play with boys to being very interested in girls and vice versa. And so with this, to go to prepubescent children and begin to push this agenda on them, including surgeries, is considered by many as child abuse. So children go through developmental stages. There's the first trimester in the womb, and the second trimester, and the third trimester, and each one they're developing things, and then they're born, and then they develop, and they're nursing, they develop a relationship with their mother, and then their father, and then their siblings, and their playmates, and these children are constantly widening their circle, developing, and drawing an identity of who they are and their relationships with these people. And so psychologists, child psychologists, admit that the brains of boys and girls process information differently. And so it's normal, it's a normal developmental stage for these young boys to want to play with boys. It's an identification stage. And they play in the sandlot, and they play ball, and they play cowboys and Indians and army men and so forth. And it's normal for girls at this young developmental stage to want to identify and play with girls and hold hands and skip down the street and play with dolls and so forth. So when a teacher introduces the thought to these children at this very young developmental stage that if you're a boy and you like to play with boys, maybe you're gay, and if you're a girl and you like to play with girls, maybe you're a lesbian, that thought swims around in their brain for nearly a decade. And they're thinking, hey, I'm a boy, I like to play with boys, maybe I'm gay. And or I'm a girl, I like to play with girls, maybe I'm a lesbian. And so this becomes confusing when they go through the natural developmental stage of the hormones kicking in and they have these confusing thoughts. And so as statistics show, there is a high rate of depression and suicide among children who have been confused this way. Now, with no moral guidelines, there's no right, there's no wrong, there's no absolutes. You can kill your own baby. Students are encouraged to experiment, and they do with little or no warning of the consequences. The fact that they are higher at risk for sexually transmitted diseases, some of them permanent, that they could get pregnant, or the depression and the thoughts of being used. The schools just teach the physical aspects with no moral guidelines and without sharing the dangerous consequences that are potentially there. And so trusting students are pushed into taking risky hormone-blocking drugs and submit to these irreversible surgical operations before they reach puberty. Again, many consider this child abuse. There's a growing number of former transsexuals who regret having had these life-altering operations, and they feel betrayed by their educators and their medical practitioners. Newsweek had an article, October 3rd, 2017, titled "Transgendered Surgery, Regret Rates Highest in Male to Female." The Federalist, and August 19th, 2015, "Transgendered Regret is Real If Media Tell You Otherwise, 20% Regret, 41% Attempt Suicide." LifeSite News, October 7th, 2019. Ex-transgender starts detransitioning advocacy group. I felt I had to do something. Large numbers of young transgenders experience regret and are seeking to detransition. CBN News, January 8th, 2020. America's first non-binary person admits big mistake, legally changes back to male. And so here people are going through a searching period in their life, and whether it's an adolescent searching period or older, and they're presented with this is the answer. And then when they go ahead and move in that direction, they realize it's not the answer. And then again, those of us that are Christian know that the real answer is to find your identity in Christ, in God, your Creator, who loves you. There is unsettled science in this area. Removing genitalia does not change a person's XX or XY chromosomes, that the person has in every single cell these male and female chromosomes. Taking artificial hormones does not change a person's chromosomes, though it does substantially increase their mortality rate. This is one of those stories that goes under the radars, that taking these hormone-blocking drugs has permanent damage that can cause higher suicide rates. Science has proven there is no gay gene, and there's no scientifically established definition for the word gay. And now, with the introduction of sexual orientation being fluid, even gay people are not permanently gay. They could be fluid and the next day be one of the other 70 different identities. Then there's the arbitrary and subjective invention of the difference between sex and gender. Sex being biological and gender being a subjectively fluid thing and it's based on your feelings. And so instead of children being taught that there are absolutes, they're taught it's all your feelings. And guess what? Feelings change every day. And so they want to say their sexual identity changes every day. And if you don't keep up with them and address them with the right pronoun, you're hateful. And so it's interesting how they're able to push this agenda. Now, liberal academia is getting into the picture by beginning to normalize pedophilia. Summit News, September 15th, 2019, reported a headline, San Diego University normalizes pedophilia as a sexual orientation. The article continues that pedophilia could be part of the acceptance of diverse sexual identities. A student who was in a class reported, an actual topic we discussed in class today at San Diego State University after watching an 8-minute Vice News video showcasing self-identified pedophiles, this is going to be mainstreamed. So the video portrayed the pedophile as being the victim of right-wing vigilantes. So they want to present their view, and anyone that disagrees with them, they want to present in a negative light. Then LGBTQ activists began a campaign of lobbying and financial extortion of businesses, including boycotting North Carolina and having sports events not be held there and Bruce Springsteen concerts backing out of being there. And then they want to financially extort Hallmark Channel and Chick-fil-A and all these different organizations and get them to cave to their agenda. Online shaming of nonconformists and tech censorship of traditional views. So now the tech industry is getting involved and wanting to censor your views if they deem them as not embracing this new sexuality. There was an article in Western Journal, January 3rd, 2020, where conservative influencer Candace Owens seems to have found a new political enemy this week in Hollywood. Actress Jamelia Jamil allegedly canceled an upcoming appearance of Owens because she tweeted, "Only women can give birth." When the British tabloid newspaper, The Daily Mirror, printed the headline, "Transgendered man gives birth to a non-binary partner baby with female sperm donor," Owens wrote, "Woman gives birth to partner's baby with male sperm donor." There, I fixed it for you. So here, what is the obvious thing, they're wanting to cancel interviews that. And then the transition is taking place so fast that people that were on the forefront of bringing about a change a short time ago, they are now vilified if they don't continually change. So the 80s pop icon Boy George, who was one who would dress in sexual confusing ways, he tweeted, "Leave your pronouns at the door." And then he again tweeted, "You must refer to me as Napoleon, and that's as ridiculous as it gets." George insisted that trans people should aspire to be more than a pronoun. And so here, he was on the forefront of leading this sexual revolution not too long ago, and now they're vilifying him because he's not going along with all the changing of the pronouns. Another past rocker, Mark Allman, who wrote the 1980s song Tainted Love, he says, "I was accused of being transphobic. I just said I didn't like all the many labels because I believed in total equality. I think too many labels are confusing. Separatist, tribal, and in my opinion, not progressive, but regressive. Just my valid opinion. Suddenly, you're transphobic?" Harry Potter, the author J.K. Rowling, caught heat for writing, "Dress however you please, call yourself whatever you like, sleep with any consenting adult who will have you, live your best life in peace and security, but force women out of their jobs for stating that sex is real." J.K. Rowling was defending a researcher named Forstadter, a woman who was fired for her quote-unquote absolutist views, and she had tweeted, "What I'm so surprised at is that smart people who I admire, who are absolutely pro-science in other areas and champion human rights and women's rights, are tying themselves in knots to avoid saying the truth that men cannot change into women because that might hurt men's feelings." So again, people that are not considered conservative are being criticized by the new avant-garde of the sexual revolution. And then the state gets into the mix. And so the power of the state is being used to criminalize those resisting the new agenda. The Washington Sentinel, October 12, 2019, had a headline, "Joe Biden wants Christians on terror list for opposing the LGBTQ agenda." So here you go from tolerating it to if you don't tolerate it, you're on a terrorist list. Then these people pushing this agenda infiltrate churches and religious denominations and religious leaders and their sexual activities making headlines, from pedophile priests to gay-affirming churches to the splitting of denominations between biblical orthodoxy and tolerance of every inconceivable behavior. FaithWire reported September 17, 2019, "Baptist Church calls transgender pastor to lead Ohio congregation. One of just a few transgendered pastors is currently serving in the denomination. Was officially ordained in the ministry in July this year before starting his tenure as pastor of Peace Community Church in Oberlin, Ohio." So again, this is something that's coming into the church. Pasadena Now, January 2020, wrote, "LGBTQ lawsuit against Fuller Seminary isn't really about discrimination, it's about religious freedom." So the article goes on, "In a federal lawsuit, Joanna Maxim and Nathan Britsen claim their civil rights were violated and they suffered emotional distress when they were expelled from the school. They are asking for $2 million. Fuller Theological Seminary, the trains students to be Christian leaders, said Daniel Bloomberg, senior counsel for the Beckett Fund for Religious Liberty. This case is about whether religious groups get to decide how to train their religious leaders free from government entanglement." And so again, we see this agenda is no longer just in the public schools. It's no longer in Hollywood or in the media. It's now coming into the churches. Washington Post ran an article, "United Methodist Church is expected to split over gay marriage, fracturing the nation's third largest denomination." The article goes on, "Reverend M. Barkley, who was ordained in 2017 as the United Methodist Church's first transgender deacon, deeming herself neither male nor female, Reverend Barkley self-identifies as being the plural third person, they." So these people are not content with being allowed to have their activity. They want to force traditionalists to validate them. And she is calling, or they, whatever the pronoun is, calling traditional Christians to repent for the significant harm that they have done to the LGBTQIA people for decades. And so, in other words, they're not content with coming out of the closet. They want to shove you into it. In an unchristian way, they're wanting to retaliate. It's sort of a reverse Sermon on the Mount. So the Sermon on the Mount, do unto others as you would have them unto you. They want to commit the crime against you and be intolerant of you because they've accused you of having been intolerant of them. Now, in the book of Revelation, it appears that this was prophesied, this coming into the church of this alternative sexual agenda. So the book of Revelation, chapter 2, verse 14, says, to the church of Pergamum, but I have a few things against you, because some of you hold to the teachings of Balaam, who taught Balak to place a stumbling block before the Israelites so that they would eat food sacrificed to idols and commit sexual immorality. So here's the Lord Jesus, book of Revelation, speaking to the church at Pergamum, saying, I have something against you because in your church you have someone that's teaching the people to commit sexual immorality. The book of Revelation goes on, chapter 2, verse 20, 21, and to the church of Thyatira, but I have this against you. You tolerate that woman Jezebel, who calls herself a prophetess. By her teaching, she misleads my servants to be sexually immoral and to eat food sacrificed to idols. Even though I have given her time to repent of her immorality, she is unwilling. So again, here we have the book of Revelation saying that in the last days, you will have people infiltrating the church, teaching them to commit sexual immorality. Now, what's next? This entire transition took place in less than a dozen years. Seemingly overnight, Christians went from thinking themselves tolerant for allowing gay marriage to them being labeled intolerant and hateful for not celebrating drag queen story hours in libraries. So here we thought, well, we'll be tolerant, we'll be Christian, we'll tolerate them doing this. And all of a sudden, you're no longer tolerant, you're the enemy, you're evil for not embracing it. And a dozen years ago, the majority of the people in America had never heard of the term transgendered, and now suddenly one could be a criminal and lose their job for denying the most basic observable feature in nature, male and female. And so thousands of years of male-female human sexuality thrown out the window in a little over a decade, and the mainstreaming of transgenderism. Is it only logical to think that there is another step to their agenda? Or is this it? Is this completely it? There's not going to be any more? Or is there something that they're going to have after this? And then another step after that, and then another step after that, and then another step after that. The situation is that lust is never appeased. Lust is like a burning fire. It always wants more. Somebody views a little pornography, they want to see more. Then they want to see more and more. Then they want to see more and more and more. And then it goes from just more of the innocent to more violent to more child abuse and more of all the perversions. And it basically goes all the way back to the biblical story of Sodom and Gomorrah. And so what's next? Well, some of the things we hear are the lowering of the age of consent. So instead of saying that these children are not old enough to make these decisions, let's lower it. And in Islam, they have child brides. So that's a culture that is acceptable of having lower ages of consent. Polygamy, having multiple wives, group sex, sex trafficking, bestiality, transhumanism. It's like, well, if you can alter your body, maybe you can even alter it even more. And so it's moving in a direction that, again, is departing further and further from biblical morality, from the book of Genesis, that God made them male and female in his image. And now those who were in their community and left, they're now vilified as traitors. So this attitude can be traced back all the way to Nebuchadnezzar. Here's the state, here's the government. And he blows his trumpets and he says, when you hear that, you immediately bow to my statue. I don't care if you have a warm feeling in your heart for my statue. I don't care if you understand my statue. You throw out whatever beliefs you have and you immediately bow. And yet Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego didn't, because they had a relationship with the God of the Bible. But it's interesting that today you have the state making the same demand. When you hear that trumpet blown on television, when you hear this new agenda being pushed, you immediately throw out all of your 6,000 years of values and you just serve the state, believe the state, whatever it tells you to do. Now, in these steps that what's next, one of them could be grooming. Now, what's that? This is a practice of preparing young children for sexual exploitation. And so teachers in the mostly public school system, but in other schools, who are teaching this agenda, whether they realize it or not, they're teaching the equivalent of grooming of children for sexual exploitation. LifeSite News, April 8th of 2019, says the Democrats' Equality Act opens the door to legalize pedophilia. So they're moving in the direction of wanting to prepare these children to be exploited. Now, up to a short time ago, exposing sexually explicit material and suggestive material to young children was a crime of grooming. And the intent of such exposure was to desensitize these children in preparation for them being exploited. LifeSite News on November 27th, 2018, has an article titled, "Drag Queen Admits That He Is Grooming Children at Story Hour Events." Quote, "We are trying to groom the next generation." So they know exactly what they're doing. They're wanting to desensitize these children. Now, this is nothing new. Ancient Roman city of Pompeii did this. If you've ever been, I went to school in Rome in college, and we traveled through all there, and sure enough, we went to Pompeii, and it was the Las Vegas of the Roman Empire. It was a sexually immoral place, and it was destroyed by Mount Vesuvius shortly after the Romans had destroyed Jerusalem. But in Pompeii, they still have murals on the walls of these explicit sexual acts, and even some of them are instructing children on this. And Thailand has a problem with child prostitution vacationers, this traveling of business people to Thailand so that they can abuse legally these little children. So pedophiles and sexual predators, they have this immoral draw toward taking advantage of little children. Is there any thought to think they wouldn't be drawn to get involved in organizations where they would have access to little children? Whether it's a scouting organization or whether it's a school situation or many places that unfortunately priests with young boys, altar boys, and we've seen these stories. It's not in any particular denomination. It's wherever there's human beings, and human beings that do not have a living relationship with the God of the Bible. This human draw towards sin has no bottom to it. And so what happens is that people intent on grooming want to get into positions of authority in these young children's lives. This could be a relative. It could be a teacher, a librarian, a school custodian, a bus driver, somebody that has the ability to develop a relationship that the kids can trust, and then they gradually move the kid in the direction of exploiting them. Sexual predators engage in grooming for months, sometimes even for years, for the purpose of developing this relationship to pull the child into this arena. What has effectively occurred is the co-opting of the child's authority figure, the teacher, and the altering of school curriculum in a kind of state-authorized grooming of school children, increasing their vulnerability for sexual exploitation. This is all taking place while Christian parents look on, or they're shamed into not speaking for fear of being labeled hateful. And so they're being quiet. And so this exploitation isn't just on a small level. It's something called sex trafficking. It is a big deal. And child sex trafficking has become an international business especially amongst the rich and powerful. And also, followers of Sharia Islam get involved in sex trafficking of children. A news article from Britain reports on Britain's grooming gang crises, a growing phenomenon in neighborhoods where large numbers of immigrants have come in. Now, this is nothing new in England. William and Catherine Booth started the Salvation Army to rescue young men and women from sex trafficking in England. All the way back in the 1800s, the founders of the Salvation Army started to stop sex trafficking. So in England, the UK Independent news source, February 23rd, 2018, had the headline, "Grooming gangs abused more than 700 women and girls around Newcastle after police appeared to punish victims." And then it goes on, "Sexual exploitation is happening in towns and cities across the country. Serious case review warns." And now this grooming also is prevalent where there is drug abuse amongst minors and where there is easy access to contraceptive, morning after pills, abortion, and where the students are no longer get their information on sex from the school and not have to tell their parents. Now, how could people do this? How could this be allowed to happen, this sex trafficking, this grooming? Well, could someone really be so debased as to want to exploit innocent children? Well, the answer is as simple as asking, could people really have an agenda to kill innocent children in abortion? And now, even after they're born, especially if they're handicapped. Remember the governor of Virginia on the radio said that if a child was born, they could leave it alive in the hospital for a couple days until the parents and the doctor decided if it should live or not. This is as pagan as ancient Rome. And so here you have a political party, and it's in their platform that they favor killing innocent unborn children. It only makes sense that they would not have the same value for born children or little children in schools if they could be used to push their agenda. And the media supports them in this. The media turns a blind eye to the selling of baby body parts. They give a pass to politicians who promote this. And this is something that is unfortunately on the rise. It's something that the church needs to address. That's why these series of videos are being put together. And that's why we have to realize that the stakes are getting higher. You know, the one scripture is where Jesus said, if you allow one of these little ones that believes in me to stumble, better that a millstone be put around your neck and to be thrown in the depths of the sea. And so in America, who's in charge? We, the people, are in charge. And so if we, the people, are allowing this, that means that God is going to hold us accountable for what happens. And so silence equals consent. If you are silent with the knowledge of all this happening, you are giving consent to all of it happening. And so remember in the old wedding ceremonies, the minister would say, anyone against this wedding, you better speak now or forever hold your peace. If you are sitting there holding your peace, you are giving consent to the wedding. Well, your silence equals consent. If there's these different crimes going on and you're not doing anything to stop it, you're silent, you are giving consent to it, and God will hold you accountable. So this is different than all dictatorships in America. The people are the king. The word citizen means co-king. You're in charge. And again, Jesus says, if you allow one of these little ones that believes me to stumble, better than a millstone be put on your neck and you'll be thrown in the depths of the sea. So this is something that our Savior, Jesus Christ, is concerned about. Their future agenda is to lower the age of consent, destigmatize pedophilia, refuse to expose or legally pursue the associates of people like Jeffrey Epstein and so forth. Why? Because the path might lead to powerful politicians. And so their tactic is interesting. It's to guilt trip Christians into being more Christian than Christ. You say, what? They say, yeah, if you're really Christian, you'll tolerate this agenda being taught to the kids. Well, question, would Jesus teach it to the kids? Jesus taught, in the beginning, God made them male and female. A man shall leave the father and mother, cleave to his wife, and the two shall become one. So in other words, they're trying to tell you, if you're really Christian, you'll tolerate something to be taught that Jesus would never teach. In other words, if you're really Christian, you won't act like Christ. That's their tactic, is to guilt trip you into being more Christian than Christ. And in other words, you're not like Christ. And Jesus will hold you accountable. You know, Jesus had a side to him that was very confrontational. His very first public sermon ended with them wanting to push him off a cliff, right? When he read the scriptures and that he walked through the midst of them and escaped. And you read through the Gospels, every other time he talked, he had someone wanting to catch him and confront him and so forth. One time he went to someone's house for dinner, and the host perceived that Jesus did not wash his hands. And Jesus said, "You Pharisees are more concerned about the outside of the cup and not the inside." And he begins to lay into him. And then there's a lawyer says, "Well, Jesus, by saying this, you're criticizing us lawyers." And Jesus says, "Well, you lawyers heap burdens on people too heavy to carry and don't even lift a finger yourself." And he starts laying into him. And then the chapter ends, and you wonder if they ever got around to eating dinner. The Jesus we serve had a side to him that was not afraid to confront. So if we're going to follow Jesus, if we're going to be Christians, then we're going to stand up for what Jesus believed. And Jesus believed and taught that in the beginning, God made them male and female, and that the two shall become one. And so the Jesus that we're following, he has a loving side, and he has a very strong side that's not afraid to confront sin and evil. So God is just in that he judges every sin, but he's love in that he provided the Lamb to take the judgment for our sin. Hope you've enjoyed this session. God bless you.
If you've enjoyed this session of Biblical Worldview Sexuality, you may be interested in attending Charis Bible College. High in the Rocky Mountains, Charis Bible College is home to a vibrant and diverse community of believers. At Charis, we're dedicated to providing students with a biblical foundation and equipping our graduates with the skills necessary to be successful in any field of ministry. Our Spirit-filled instructors are committed to helping you discover God's purpose for your life.
If you sit under the Word of God 4 hours a day, 5 days a week for 2 or 3 years, you're going to get stronger than horseradish.
Discover God's purpose for your life at Charis Bible College. Change your life. Change the world. Visit charisbiblecollege.org to find out if Charis is the right choice for you.